Welcome to the Time Management Podcast with me, your host, Abigail Barnes. I'm a productivity coach, global speaker, time management author, and award-winning entrepreneur on a mission to share the 888 formula with the world and to remind you that it's your time. Leave it to me to bring you new time management tips, tricks, tools, and strategies, to introduce you to guests, research, and case studies from around the world, and to give you a simple five-step process you can follow to up-level your productivity, achieve your goals, and create a life that exceeds your wildest dreams. I'm so excited that you're here, so let's get started. Welcome to the show. Today, my guest is Ellie Bourton. She is a book publisher by day, yoga teacher by night. Ellie, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I'm so excited for this conversation today. So let's just dive straight in. Who is Ellie Bourton in a nutshell?
Well, I'm Italian and I moved to the UK a very long time ago, almost a decade ago, to start my career in publishing. And I work for a children publisher and I'm in charge of the Italian market. So it's like having Italian publishing house in within the UK publishing house. So I like look after all the sales and operation on that side. And then I'm also, after the 9 to 5, I'm also a yoga teacher, as you know. I teach yoga. I've been teaching a lot of different styles of yoga, from mat yoga to aerial.
Ellie is one of the yoga teachers that I do classes with every single week. When I've spoken to Ellie about my own challenges when it comes to yoga, having scoliosis, I've shared this on the podcast before. Ellie then shared that she also has scoliosis, and this has led to today's episode. I'm so excited for us to hear how Ellie manages and juggles her work, her yoga, her personal life, and all the things. Let's dive into some more questions. Talk to us about your relationship with time. What was it like back in the day?
Very stressful. I always felt like the time was against me and I was always running out of time. I think it comes from a kind of like belief in the society that we need to reach some goals by a certain age. And I was comparing myself to my peers, others, and I was always rushing to trying to like keep up. Later on, I learned that I just have a different way of learning and a different way of getting passionate about things. In the past, time brought me like a lot of anxiety, and by the age of 18, actually like a chronic gastritis due to stress. Let's say that my teenager and first adult life was really feeling anxious about time.
Was there a moment that helped you to see time differently?
Yes. I moved first to France to finish my studies and then to the UK to start working here. I really wanted to prove myself, to prove my worth. And I think this is a very common speech by a lot of people that maybe with low self-esteem, they kind of like overdo it in order to make sure that my place is where I'm supposed to be and I'm not like a fraud or I'm not here as anyway. The imposter syndrome is always there. What I did basically is that I overworked myself. So when I was working on my supposedly 9 to 5 job, I was actually doing a lot more hours. I was not having any other type of interest outside of work, which I really not recommend it. And that was really affecting my mental health and my physical health because, as you mentioned, because of my scoliosis and my problems with my back and my bones in general, I was really, really struggling. So I reached a point where I was stuck, properly stuck with my back and my neck every month. So every month I will literally wake up and not be able to move, crying from the pain. And that's where I actually decided to try to find alternative ways. I wasn't a sport person at all. I did literally nothing until I was 28. And when I was 28, when this kind of like reaching my late 20s, finding myself working so much and asking myself, what do I want from my life, led me into discovering yoga. First, I went to yoga for my pain. And the more I was doing yoga, the less pain I was feeling in my body. And then it became kind of like a discovering process where I discovered that it wasn't just my body, it was also my mind. And I was applying the teachings from the yoga to the rest of my life. And that's where it was like a turning moment for me.
It really sounds like it's just stepping stones, step by step by step by step. You tried one thing and tried another thing. Just to specifically talk about the scoliosis, you have not had any operations on your spine for it?
No, I haven't. I haven't, because when I was first diagnosed, it was not as like, I see similarities to your story. Basically, I had a fever when I was 10 years old and my family doctor came to the house to visit me. And hearing my breath, I don't know, the kind of like checks that they run on you. He actually called my mom and he asked my mom, like, have you noticed that the right side of her back is higher than the left? And literally my mom was like, nobody ever noticed. And so when I was 10, we figured out that I had scoliosis. Actually, technically it's called rotoscoliosis because the vertebrae are also rotated and twisted. So then I started doing physiotherapy, and with the physiotherapy I was advised against an operation because I also have an hyperlordosis, which means, with like to laugh, I call it the duck bum, which means that my lower back, the curve is really more accentuated than normal. And if I had an operation or if I had any other type of support to, let's say, fix or help the scoliosis, then I will damage more the lower back. So it was kind of like a tricky situation. And that's why I was doing physiotherapy. Especially the thing that really helped me at the time was doing physiotherapy in the water. And because without the weight of gravity, it was so good to move and trying to feel less pain. So basically, since I was 10, I've been living with pain every single day of my life. When I ended up discovering yoga, it was kind of like a big relief because I could finally find a way to have days where I don't feel so much pain, or maybe I just feel pain just a bit in the morning, but not through the whole day. The fact that the spine is so twisted, let's say, it also has repercussion to other parts of the body. So for example, I will have numb finger all the time. I will have a lot of pain here in the elbows and on my forearms. I will get my neck stuck. So it's kind of like a chain of things that will just get like super stiff and stuck. That also, it doesn't help with your self-esteem, especially when you're young, because you feel pain. And you want to be like the others. But then I went through a phase of shame for my own body because I thought I told myself that, for example, I could never wear a dress that has the back open because everybody will see my scoliosis. And, you know, it was so terrible, awful. And growing up, I actually learned that first, not everybody noticed that. Not everybody knows how to look for people. I know now because, of course, I have one and I'm also a yoga teacher. So I've studied the anatomy. And in the class, for example, I can tell who has it and who doesn't. And trust me, it's a lot of people. And I thought I was one-off and the odd case. But actually, no, it's a lot of us that have this kind of issue. That's pretty much how I find out.
Thank you so much for sharing your story and for being so incredibly vulnerable with your journey with it as well. I identify with so many things that you have said. So I have idiopathic scoliosis, is how they call it. So mine also started in childhood, but wasn't noticed until I was 16. What I take away from this is every single human body, the anatomy is different. The other thing is that we never know what is going on in somebody else's brain, in somebody else's life, in somebody else's body, in somebody else's situation. As you say, you can look at someone from the outside, and you as a child, when you have no skill set, are comparing apples with apples, but it's not. It's an apple and an orange. We are all different. We are all moving through, coping with, learning how to use what it is that we have been given and how to move forward. So thank you for sharing it. Thank you for laying such a fantastic foundation and for being a huge inspiration to me as well and to others I know who will listen to this episode of What is Possible. I am the operations side and now I have a certain aesthetic as a result of it, but then my mobility is incredibly limited. You have unbelievable flexibility for somebody in my mind who has scoliosis. Obviously, you have your own consequences as a result of not having the operation. Thank you for sharing it. Everybody is different. We could have a whole nother episode about scoliosis, and maybe we will.
The fact that you just said that you think I'm super flexible, I don't think I am, because of course I compare myself to other yoga teachers that have other type of backgrounds, like dancers and all these like acrobats, amazing things that I wish I could do, but I can't. I think I mentioned to you a few weeks ago, there are some poses and some things that I just don't do because I know they harm my body. And the purpose of yoga is to help the body to feel better and to improve whatever I have or whatever everybody has. And I think this is like always something. It's very easy to compare yourself to the neighbor and look like, oh, look at that backbend. I can't do backbends. I tried so hard and it is actually very, very painful. And then with time, I figure out it's because of the shape of my bones. I can't do backbends. And that's it. I offer it in the class. I said, if you have a backbend, go ahead because it's your practice, but I'm not going to have it.
There's a couple of things in this yoga journey. I started, for those of you who have been followers of the podcast from the beginning, follow me on social media, you will see I've documented I started my yoga journey. This time around, in May of 2023, I say this time around because I have practiced yoga over the years, but it was something that was offered in a gym, as a class, maybe I did something online. This time around, I have started to see yoga in a totally different way, from a totally different perspective. The first is that all of you teachers who I experience through the studio I go to call it a practice. So many of us get het up and irate about, I need to exercise, I must exercise, I have to move my body, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I want to get better. I want to be the best. The thing that I love about the yoga and how you're all teaching it is it's a practice. There is no final outcome. There is just today and how your body is responding today. Ellie is one of the teachers who always get us to notice where we're at and what we're feeling at the start of the class and then what we're feeling at the end of the class so that we can observe the movement of energy, the process of what we are going through in order to be able to achieve an outcome. But it's not done from the point of view of, oh, okay, so do you all feel better now? It's done from the point of view of observation of where you were, observation of where you are right now. And in one of my trainings, I talk about how your current location is not your final destination. That we're always, always, always evolving. It is a journey. We're here to talk about time, but we're also here to talk about yoga. I feel that they're so interlinked because, as I'm saying, going to the studio has been quite profoundly transformational for me. But talk to us about you are living with constant pain. And I know what that feels like, living with constant pain, to the point where when you speak to a doctor and they say, tell me about the pain, it's quite hard. In some ways, that's a really weird word to use, but it's quite hard in some ways to articulate because you've created a coping mechanism for it.
I had this situation many times when they asked me for other things. What's the pain from 0 to 10? I thought it was a 3. And then actually at the end of the examination, I found out it actually was an 8. And I think that's because over the past 20 plus years, I built a resistance to pain. It's not great, but it's what we have to do, I guess, to have a life where I'm not just like overwhelmed by the pain.
Yoga has helped me to improve my connection to my body and my mobility. What has yoga brought to you and your life?
Back at the time when I was telling you about my overworking problem, so I was overworking myself at the office and then I just like sat in doing this yoga practice, which really helped me. I ended up going to a yoga retreat in Morocco. It was amazing. When I was there, we were doing an inversion workshop. And I found myself like with 10 people around me asking me to help them and to teach them. And I look at my teachers and because, of course, like at the time I had like, what? Why am I here? Why everybody's asking me? And the teachers said like, go. Just do what you're doing. And the same evening of that day, the two teachers just came to me and asked me, have you ever thought about doing a teacher training? And I said, no, but now I am. The way that I am is that if I'm passionate about something, I just go 100% diving in. I don't really do things superficially, like not with relationships, not with passions, not with anything. It's just the type of person that I am. 6 months after that, I went to India for a month. That was the most transformational time for me because I slowed down. For the first time in years, I had nothing to do except practicing, learning, going to classes, and enjoying India. It was amazing. I still have goosebumps. It was not just the body practice. It was also the journey through my past to understand why I was reacting to certain things in a certain way. So when I came back from that month in India, I found myself back at the office. So the way that I am, I came from India after a month with my two suitcases. I went straight to the office because of how, like, I thought that I actually couldn't lose more time. Later on, I just started having this yoga just for myself. I thought like that's what my first thinking was. And then people like friends, colleagues, they start asking me to help them and to teach them. And that's how I started teaching. I went to India in a totally eat, pray, love thing. I was going there to try to find a way to figure out who I was, why I was here, like the usual philosophical questions. Then I discovered another side of myself that I didn't know I had, which is the coaching side. And I found myself being a coach and help people going through whatever they're going through, not just with the body, but also in the mind. And that's where I realized that first, I wasn't the only one to feel overwhelmed, to feel stressed, to feel anxious. And that was really, let's say, something that in our society is really, really common. Then I found out that I now had the tools to improve and to help people to feel better about whatever they were going through. So that's how it was transformational for me. And that's how I ended up basically teaching, because then from one person, it went to five and then 10. I started going to in the studio where I was practicing. And from there, it was literally like building up. The mistake that I made, because again, I define myself kind of a workaholic, because that's in order to work less in my office job, I overwork myself in the yoga job, which means that at the end of 5 years, I had no time for practicing myself, because of course I have a 95 plus job. And then I was teaching up to like 4 days a week, which of course leaves very little time to recover, rest, and have a social life or having anything else outside of this. The mistake that I made is that I turned my passion into another work and I overworked myself on that side. And I think that was always the perception that I was missing out. So always the fact that because I have the office job, I'm missing out on the opportunity of being a full-time freelancer yoga teacher and developing as a coach. And I felt pressure from both sides now. So I found myself in a situation where I was literally overwhelmed and feeling I didn't have enough time. What I started to do, it was scheduling. And I became a professional scheduler. So my new passion is actually placing things in a slot, in a time slot. And I dedicate that time slot to do that thing, which is great because, for example, whenever I come to the studio to teach, everything that happened, I always introduce my classes saying that, but everything that happened in the day, everything that still needs to happen after, it doesn't matter. So it's kind of like a mindset of resetting whatever is going on in order to focus on the present moment. And that practice of teaching in that way helped me to understand that I had a new tool that I could apply to the rest of my life. So I try to apply this into everything I do.
Let's break this all down into what I'm hearing you say. You are going through your career. You are learning how to manage your time. You are learning how to prioritize things, what is important. And you hit that classic, what is my life purpose question. You have your eat, pray, love moment. Go on this yoga retreat to Morocco. You discover that perhaps you have the capacity for teaching, but you have a day job. I want to go back to, and you just went to India for a month. I meet lots of people who have a career and they have a passion. They have a drive in them that maybe I want to train as a yoga teacher. But the sentence that usually follows is, I don't have time. Talk us through, you discover that you have a talent. You find somewhere, a place to go that you can learn how to get trained, but it's a month. You have a full-time job. Talk us through the process of how you actually found the time, made the time, fitted it all in, arrived back in the UK and go straight back to work.
I asked to my employer first if I could literally join my end of the year and beginning of the year holidays. So what happened is that for the whole year, I took just half of the allowance that I had and I merged it with the bank holidays over Christmas. And then I took 2 more weeks in December in order to allow the full months for the training. So that's how like I organized it with my employer. Of course, I had 6 months to prepare for this. So what I've done is that I made sure that everything, I didn't have a backlog to think of at work, or I wouldn't have anybody calling me while I was on the other side of the planet on another time zone. I really organized myself to have like this, let's call it freedom, to be away for this amount of time. The reason why I came back straight to the office, I think, is because at the time I was feeling guilty because I left for so long, so I have to come back as soon as possible. That day at the office was totally not pointless, but not the best uses of my time. I could have gone back home, get back on my feet after the jet lag and then gone to the office. But I think the reason why I went straight there is because at the time I still didn't have the feeling of secure enough in order to say, it's fine, I can do this tomorrow. So what's changed from then and now is that because I told you, I overworked myself on the yoga side as well. So I found myself in a tricky position where in order to not overwork myself on one side, I did the same mistake on the other side. Then I start allocating things. When I'm at work, like most of the people, for example, they don't believe I have a 9-to-5 job or that I'm also a yoga teacher. They're totally surprised when they learn this about me. And I think it's because I kind of like have a compartment where I'm there and I'm fully there 100%. And then the moment that I leave, I focus on the next thing. And I started doing that with everything in my life, even the chores at home, because otherwise I have always the feeling that I'm running out of time. I don't know when to do this thing. I have all these to-do lists and it's like endless because everything gets added on all the time. And that's how I think I managed to do it. Also, I always tell people that I am at the base, kind of hyperactive. I am an extremely passionate person and I get like super excited about things and I really put 100% of myself and I don't want people to compare themselves to me saying, oh, she's doing it, I have to do it. I had this from friends, colleagues a lot of times. And I always tell people, you don't have the same life experience that I have. You're going through different things.
So you've gone to India, you've done this training, you've got this yoga qualification, you've come back, you've gone straight to work. And what I'm hearing you say is that there's still something in you that's driving you to perform, 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 perform. It's almost like that imposter is still there. What was the next step on the journey from the yoga teacher training to then, this is who I am, this is how I'm going to do it, this is how I do time, this is how I do my life?
It was very hard, I'm not going to lie, because I will say that on top of the imposter syndrome on my 9-to-5 job, I now had a new imposter syndrome of who am I to pretended I want to be a yoga teacher. There are so many like more flexible, sporty and qualified people around. And it was hard because I had this call from people asking me to help them. And the way that I am, I really want to help people. Like that's the main reason why I do everything. And then I had these other boys telling me like, you shouldn't do this because you are not qualified enough or you're not good enough. So it was tricky to find. And I guess like he entered into a process of also finding who I am. And one thing that I put on my vision board now 8 years ago, it was find your voice. So I, with the help of yoga friends, so other teachers, I managed to find my voice and find my why. Why am I doing this? Because at the end of the day, it all comes to why you're doing everything that you do. And if you are able to answer that question, then everything else is easier to approach. Like in your mind, you can tell, yes, of course, I'm not a dancer and I'm not a circus acrobat, but I can offer something else to people. I can offer something, an example of how I can overcome some issues that I have. That's what changed. Instead of comparing myself to, which is very difficult because I still do it and I try not to, but it's so hard. Instead of looking at people that are, of course, like they have a totally different background and body than mine, I try to say, sure, and this is what I have to offer for whoever wants to take it. Because the other thing is, and I think that's social media and everything that's around us doesn't help, is that the performance that you are supposed to have is set by standards that sometimes are not realistic for everybody. Every time I find my brain going into the area again, I tell myself, this is my voice, this is why I'm doing this. And the fact that I'm doing this to help other people helps me to overcome these self-doubts.
What I'm hearing you say there is a lifelong journey. It's a process. And the more you do it, the more you live it, the more you embody it, the more you become it. And you are creating your own reality. I love, love, love that. And for the benefit of the listeners, Ellie's class is one of my favorite and my yoga friends' favorite classes of the week. Ellie, tell us your beliefs and mantras around yoga and the fact that it's the strength of the body, not the Instagrammability of the body.
Absolutely. That's one really is a key thing for me, because I always joke, because also jokes are the way that I kind of like get to people. And I always joke, but I'm really serious when I say you're not in this room to get the next Instagram shot, because that's not something. So first, the people, and I really admire them, some of them, they're also my friends. And, you know, you don't know their full story. And maybe if you have started doing ballet when you were four, possibly today you will be able to do that. But if you, like me, are you starting in a adult age to move your body for probably the first time, I think that looking at those Instagrammable thing can change the perspective of how you perceive your practice. So that's why I always try to say, connect to the body. Don't look at your neighbor, because you don't know what the neighbor is going through. You don't know. And that's why also when I teach, I try not to put too much myself on display, because I don't want you, all the people, to look at something. Of course, I want to guide and give indication on how to do things, but I don't like the idea. If I want to see a performance show, I will get myself a ticket for a show. Like I want to be there for whoever decided to join that class, for to make them feel good about themselves. And that's why I always try to give like three or more options in order to give something to everybody, because that's the way that I felt. It was when I started practicing yoga, I was like, yeah, but I'm never going to be able to do that stuff. And then eventually some of them, I managed to do them over time with the practice. But that belief that made me compare my body to other bodies, that was really something that is one of my mantras to try to help the others to not have, because it's a struggle I went through and I want to offer my experience for others in order to not to feel the same way or to maybe try to feel better soon or sooner. Just as a anecdote, once one person told me that they were very surprised to learn that I was a yoga teacher because, and they didn't say anything. And I asked them like, because, and then at the end, it was because I don't have what that person thought a yoga body should be like. And that's where I come in and I say, there is no yoga body. If you take, even without the mat, with the mat, wherever, if you are practicing, you have a yoga body. It doesn't matter how you look, it's what's going inside you, what benefits you're taking from the practice, mentally and physically.
I love this. I think one of the takeaways from this conversation today is really going to be busting apart the stereotype of how aesthetically people look versus mental resilience and physical strength. Because the thing that I take away from yoga, my word for the year last year was strong. Also my word carrying on into this year, because for me, we don't have hard or easy classes. We have strong classes. And it's all about your strength. And looking at the people doing the headstands and doing the handstands and all of the things, they are strong. And as you say, it is just how you are in your own body. Let's focus a bit on how you have designed your career and your life to create the lifestyle. You have your 9-to-5 job. You do courses and trainings to learn more things. You were talking earlier about how you time box. Tell us a bit more about what this really looks like so that you have time for all the things. You fit everything in.
So it all started from learning what a vision board is. I'm a very visual person and I had all these like things in my head that I wanted to do and I wanted to make real, but I had no idea how. So it started like probably 8 or 9 years ago when I did my first, not very good vision board, but I learned how to, you know, visualize and put there things. And as I was doing my vision board, I realized that I created sections. So I had the health section, I had the movement section, I had the career section. And that's how I started looking at my life, because otherwise it's too overwhelming. And I think it's not just because I have two, careers or jobs. I think I would feel overwhelmed by anything else, because if you look at all the things that you need to do, it's, oh my God. But if I compared, I started from like visually putting all the things that I wanted to achieve in that area, and then for the yoga, and in this area for the coaching, and in this area for my publishing work, everything became more clear. And that's how I decided to start allocating days and times to activities. And the more I started doing that, the more achievable everything became. And then I started, of course, educating myself with webinars and courses and things that, of course, like I work in publishing, so I love books. So I start reading books about how to make, like I think one of them, there was The Power of Habit, like how to learn how to change your life, making some things just a habit. So your body and your mind just used to have those. And that's how you can progress. So every year I will set myself some, let's say, goals, and I will try to bring new habits in my life in order to make that achievable, but not in a way that I will stress myself and I will bring that performance pressure on myself, because I hurted myself doing that in the past. So I tried to find a way to say, okay, so I want to now, as you might have seen from my stories, I'm learning how to run because cardio is not my thing. That's what I used to say to myself all the time. So now, for example, I am following a thing where I put myself the goal of running 5K this year. And I try to allocate in my calendar, I literally allocated the days and the times where this is happening. And this calendar is shared with my partner, so he's also aware of that, which makes me reliable, because I need to justify, even if, I mean, it's not going to say anything, but I need to justify if I'm not doing that. So the fact that I make myself accountable for that thing helped me to reach my goals. So instead of like looking at this mountain of things that I wanted to achieve and all this mountain of things that I wanted to do, I try to break them down by categories first and then by time slots. And by doing so, I apply this reasoning to everything else. And little by little, to be honest with you, I managed to do little achievements after little achievements. And then one day I turned around and was like, I've done a few. So that's why it's like, okay, this way is working. And now I even have the laundry in my calendar, share calendar. So I have the laundry slot and is every Sunday at 11. So, you know, it's just, of course, it's not mandatory. If I'm on a weekend, I'm on a weekend, but it's just to give a structure to my life. And that's the way that I found it helped me to do it all, if that's what you want to see it.
So what I'm hearing you say is that you schedule all your different activities, all your different responsibilities, and doing it step by step is what helps you to achieve it. Ellie, this conversation has been absolutely incredible. We've gone off in so many different directions. Tell us something that you think you do with your time that you know most people don't.
That's a difficult one, because the more I speak to people, the more I find out that actually I'm not the only one doing some things that I think that are odd. Maybe scheduling the laundry every week or scheduling like this kind of activities that should be like the concept for me is that I feel overwhelmed to look at all my clothes piling up. And I know if I don't do my laundry, then I will not have enough clothes for the week after to train, to teach. And that will make me feel anxious. But then by allocating this laundry slot, which I know a lot of friends of mine, they laugh at me for this, but I know that on the Sunday, I'm going to do that. And that allows me to free my head and to free my time and my space to do other things. While if I were not allocating that slot, I will always feel like that's at the back of my head and is a thought that is occupying my head space, and I'm not free to think or to do anything else because that's at the back of my head. So I think, yeah, that might be one of the things that not most people do, and I really recommend trying to do and try out. It feels like
schedule your laundry. Fantastic. That is such a great top tip there as well for us to take away. As we wrap up this conversation here today, I can't believe how the time has flown. Tell us, where is the best place that we can connect with you and find out more about what it is that you have going on?
For my professional 9 to 5 will be LinkedIn. For the yoga is, of course, my Instagram and my yoga email.
As always, don't worry. We will put all the links in the show notes so that you can find Ellie in all the different places on the LinkedIn and on the Instagrams. Final question, what have you got coming up for 2024?
2024 for me is a reset here. As I said before, I was overworking with my yoga teaching, and I find myself in a moment where I need to reset. So I'm actually like dedicating a lot of time on learning again to advance in my own practice, which is something that unfortunately, for example, last year, I didn't have the time to do because I was overworking myself. But I already have, of course, some ideas for the future, and I guess I will share more once they become more tangible.
Thank you so much for your time today and for joining us on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And until next time, my friends, remember, stay safe, stay well, and it's your time. Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. If you loved what you heard, be sure to let me know by leaving a review so I can keep the good stuff coming. Come and say hi on Instagram at Success by Design Training, or visit my website, successbydesigntraining.com, or connect with me on LinkedIn. Just search Abigail Barnes. Until next time, don't forget, you are amazing and it's your time.